Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap on January the 4th of 2017. It's a new year, and how else to ring in the new year but by looking back to the past and not looking at the future at all.
And learning nothing from it, Nick.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
I intend to repeat every mistake I made, perhaps double the mistakes, repeat the same mistake twice even, so I don't even learn from the history of learning from my first history. I'm looking forward to it, Nick. Should be pretty fun. I think I'm going to start titling all of our episodes with big spoilers for major manga in the title for all the people who are still following by the anime.
What was it?
I spoiled who Obito was, or Toby was.
Toby is Obito, that's right.
Yeah.
And it's a classic one. It's like 3 years ago or something now.
It was our most watched episode, mostly from people who watched it and just wrote very angry messages at us. Mostly.
How dare you! It worked!
In fairness, I did deserve it. It was very dumb on my part. On the second hand...
If I remember, you launched into an apology in the next episode, and I was like, yeah, you fucked up.
It was just like, I'm really sorry. But not for nothing, I've quickly learned that anime fans will not give you the time of day if you are...
Absolutely not.
If they feel you've besmirched something they adore.
Absolutely not, no. Like, that is still, I think, like, peak fandom. Like, you're not gonna beat anything. Like, oh, you think that people get angry when you've spoiled Game of Thrones? No. No.
Well, to be fair, Benzai was also very angry at me for doing that, too.
So. How dare you do this?
What the fuck, Chris? The worst bad guy on the planet gets killed eventually? Not for nothing, Benzai, but come on.
Somebody in Game of Thrones died?
It's the first time we've talked.
I thought they were just
have
sex forever.
Ben, please, we haven't talked in 4 years. Don't let this be our interaction. Oh, you're so fat and ugly, and I hate you.
Well, first making fun of Benzai moment of 2017. There we go.
it's all being counted one by one. And guys, I see people who are complaining that the hitbox isn't working for them, or the chat isn't at least. Swap over to Twitch if you are having an issue, because that's the point in multi-streaming. So we're on Twitch and hitbox. If one doesn't work, you can go to the other, and hopefully it does.
Yeah. So it's that time of year where we look back on what we've done and remember the good times, remember the bad times, and then come to a decision on what was the best and what was the worst. For the last few years, we've gone over what recommendations we liked, what recommendations we didn't like, and of course, recapped in brief what our regular series got done in the past year. We're going to have a lot of, this series ended to talk about.
Yes.
This time around. Usually it's been like one every other year, and this time like three series that we've been recapping just all ended like within 3 months of each other. And so yeah, we've got a lot of that to talk about. And also we've got awards to give out.
Yes. You can have the patented Weekly Manga Recap Superlative Award Cup of Chai Tea Latte that we give out. Like, so if Luffy wins an award, he can collect his chai latte award that I'm going to be drinking throughout the show.
You're really banking on fictional characters not coming to life to claim those prizes, aren't you?
Yeah, it's going to be really important. If I had to keep giving away all my mugs because the fictional characters are like, hey, we won an award, give us that. I'm like, but I'm thirsty. I'm thirsty.
That's what you want to do. That's the first thing that you're going to have to say about that. Not, Luffy, you're real.
Yeah, no, I'm like, no.
You can be my real superhero.
I'm just like, wait, I don't get to keep mine?
I'm very greedy.
Chris doesn't get his? So, where do we normally start off? I can't remember if we started off talking about the series we recapped or the recommendations. Where do we want to start?
I can't remember what order we tend to do it in.
I guess let's do the recommendations. Let's get those out of the way, because everything else relates to the recap.
That's easiest. So I guess we don't actually have as many to go over this year. because of our doing JoJo's Bizarre Pokemon Adventure experience. Five of the recommendations we did were two series, and which we did through throughout the year. So we got through three series of JoJo. We got through two sets of Pokemon Adventure. Had a good time doing both. Some of those were some very intense, long discussions.
And I imagine that adventure isn't quite over yet, too. We've only gotten through three parts of eight parts of JoJo, and I don't know how many
parts. I have every intention
of
us just continuing after this, yeah.
So we'll have plenty of those. But it did play a part into the fact that we didn't review as many series as I think we did the year before. But there were still actually going through the recommendations of 2016. There were several that I forgot completely, and then some that I was like, oh yes. Yeah, we talked about that, and that one was really cool. So, I'll just run down the list we have here,
yeah,
and we can give our thoughts on it. So we start off the year kicking off the JoJo's Bizarre Pokemon Adventure by talking about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Phantom Blood, which was your first exposure to JoJo entirely. Yeah. And
had a good time, but I mean, looking back, it's definitely, especially now that I've read the two parts that followed it, it's like, yeah.
That's why I think it's great to read that part first, because it's really hard to go back and read it. But if it's your first exposure to anything, then it flows a lot better.
Yes.
After that, we read a porno, basically. We read Akasora. Yeah.
Accidentally took a recommendation without knowing exactly what it was, and decided to go through on it because there was at least enough to talk about to do a recap on. That is one of my favorite episodes to go back and listen to because of the hysterics that it drives us to with how incredibly terrible and stupid that series is. And honestly, I think that I'm glad that we did it.
Oh, yeah. I'm, it's not an episode I'm like, man, if we can go back in time and change it, I'm like, oh, no, let's do it again. Before I changed it up with some of the later nominees I actually had on the What the Fuck Manga moment in Manga of the Year was when we read that Sora's sister threatens to cut his dick off. So that just goes to show you how amazing that series is. Legitimately threatens to cut his dick off, by the way.
Yeah.
After Akisora, we talked about Snow White with the Red Hair, which was a pretty fine romance series. A little bit dry, but it was nice to see one that kind of bucked a lot of the trends we saw with like shoujo series.
It was a bit of an odd one when I saw that while going back on stuff, because I was like, oh yeah, we did read that. It was something that I kind of forgotten about, and I remember liking it all right, but yeah, I agree with you, it was a bit dry, and not a whole lot. I don't think there's like a moment of that series that I can point to be like, oh yeah, I remember exactly when that happened. So
yeah. The thing I think I appreciated the most was that there wasn't a lot of melodrama, which shoujo tends to get into. So that was nice. But after that, we did Ajin, which was a series about the like otherworldly kind of like monster following the kid, or turned into it. I can't remember the exact premise.
They were immortals, and whenever died and came back, they would summon this bizarre shadowy creature made from these particles that were only visible to other Ajin.
That's correct. Which I think we both liked, though. I think you liked a good deal more than I did.
I liked the way that they found ways to, like, weaponize the immortality. Like, there's that scene where an entire SWAT unit is trying to kill the villain of the series, and the thing that they resort to is just killing him over and over and over again before he can react. And, they do some crazy stuff to get out of it. Also, he does that suicide attack right before that, where he just uses his bullshit immortality in order to hijack the plane and then just steers into a building and then he comes back out of the wreckage.
I do remember it having some ridiculous moments like that.
Mm-hmm.
Following that, we did
Shishunki
no Iron Maiden, which was, at first, seemed like a very ridiculous series about, like, a guy who has to keep a girl's secret that she's slowly, like, molting into a fucking iron dragon. But beyond all that stuff, there was actually a rather earnest love story underneath. And I remember actually enjoying it a good deal.
Yeah, but we had to really look past all of the rapey stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you have to... Look, Nikki, you can't make an omelet without breaking a few rapey scenes, okay? After that was Hana Matsuri, which was, if I believe, that's the one with the mob boss who gets like a that comes to take a little girl who has crazy psychic powers.
Yeah, it's a weird comedy series about these psychic girl, and then there are a couple other psychic girls that are introduced into it
that aren't as funny and are a lot more depressing and sad.
And we had Annalise on with us to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. We had Annalise on quite a few episodes this year too.
I think it was like four or five times throughout the year,
because we also had her on the Snow White with the red hair, and we also had her on the Love Life episode, or not Love Life, his favorite that comes up later on this list. So we had her on plenty of episodes, and she's even in the chat right now, having recently returned from her trip to Japan. So, hello, Annalise.
Hello.
Hi! Oh, my God, Nick, she's here with us.
He's invaded the podcast.
I'm in your house! Why do you sound like Katori? After the Hinamatsuri, we did JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 2, Battle Tendency. So our first look into a more traditional look of JoJo, and followed that up with Pokemon Adventures Red and Blue.
Yep.
Much enjoyed series. Then we followed up with a very different series for us, A Silent Voice, which was the series about the deaf girl who had a complicated relationship, we should say, with one of the kids who bullied her. And it was a very powerful story, but...
Had a very long discussion about it, too.
Yeah. It's one of the more, I think, significant episodes we did this year. I think if you were looking for any of like the non-JoJo or Pokemon stuff to kind of see our thoughts on, that's probably the one you're going to get the most good discussion out of, because there was a lot to say about that one. Then we did Today Love Starts, which I don't remember. Oh, wait, no, that's the one with, like, the super douchey guy as the love interest, the, like...
The guy who essentially sexually harasses a woman for his own because he gets off on her being scared of him and having power over her, and then she decides that she likes it, and they start a relationship after that. Yeah.
Yeah, that one wasn't very good.
No, not one.
Then we did Murcielago. Which was the one with the crazy lesbian...
With the boob lesbian.
Essentially, boob lesbian Deadpool was more or less what the series was.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's what it boils down to. It was a fun ride, but it was not particularly great, I'll admit.
It was one of those series where I think we just had difficulties turning our, like, moral compass off and accepting the fact that she was just an awful person. But,
it's
one of those ones that I think people who may not exactly match up with our taste probably would be able to find a lot of enjoyment out of, because, you know, not everyone has the exact same opinions as us. And, that's one of the ones I think probably if you're into it, you're going to love it. So good one to check out there. Then we did his favorite, which was our first yaoi manga on Weekly Manga Recap. 5 years going, it only took us 5 years to review a yaoi manga, Nick. That's progressiveness right there.
And was it worth the wait?
No, it was pretty boring, if I remember correctly.
We're just kind of like, okay.
More or less. It wasn't as scandalous as I hoped it would be. Like, I guess I would just watch one too many, like, Bravo commercials. It was just like, oh, it's going to be flamboyant all over the place. I was like, oh, it's just like a regular romance series but with two dudes. This is boring.
It does also feature the best 5-word review of Love Pistols ever, because we had Annalise on that. 4-word review, I should say. I think that when I brought up, she said, "I love that garbage."
Annalise again is in the chat, and she's saying it's barely yaoi, so let's be real. So maybe we'll review some more scandalous ones.
Shonen Eye. Fine.
Following that was the month in which Bleach ended. So, Blogust, as we all lovingly remember it. So, in honor of that, we took a look at Kubo's previous work, Zombie Powder.
And, with a period.
Yes. Fucking. In all caps, too, because it has to be that.
My one word.
Which was kind of interesting to read. I think mostly just because of the fact that we had, you know, been reading Bleach for so long, it was just kind of interesting to see, like, oh, this is what this guy wrote, like, a decade ago or whatever. You know, it's just kind of interesting to see that look back at the past.
It was definitely something that was, if you really like Kubo, then it's essential reading. But it's interesting besides that.
Then we continued the Pokemon adventure with Gold and Silver, which was a really
fun long discussion about that because I don't know. I think that it was because I had a lot to gush about how much I like second generation Pokemon, but we also had to talk about how bullshit it is that nobody figures out who the villain is. Who is Master Mask of Ice? Could it be the one guy who uses ice Pokemon?
Who doesn't hide the fact he uses them?
In very bizarre ways.
Following that, we had reached a goal, a milestone on Patreon, and did a review.
Very important milestone.
That was long promised and long awaited, the much maligned Air Gear review. That was like a month long in the making. It was an episode where I like blew my throat out screaming about Obama in front of Congress talking about roller skates.
That was our longest series review discussion. And we had to tear through the rest of the recap because we had been going on so long. That was a discussion that on the series that lasted more than an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And we still have more to say about it afterwards.
There was not a lot of love lost for Air Gear.
No. I don't think that anyone sent us hate mail about hating on Air Gear yet.
No, I've yet to see that. I feel like the Air Gear diehard community isn't out in full force anymore, but I could be wrong.
I think that they died hard, yeah.
Yeah. Following Air Gear, we went into Halloween month, where we started with Fuwan no Tane, which was a series of kind of like snippets of paranoia put into a short story format.
That might have been our shortest discussion of the year.
Yeah, it was a kind of tough series to talk about when it's like, hey, like you ever had a scene where like a feeling like you're gonna reach into a room to turn on the light, and then like you're like, what if a hand grabbed my hand? And it's like, oh, well, the manga did that. Doesn't tell you what happens afterwards. Just does it.
You ever look at your plate after you've eaten and you the remnants of the food sort of look like a face? It's kind of creepy when that happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, next chapter.
Yeah. Sometimes when you're walking across the street, you're like, what the fuck? Then we did Emerging, which was not a horror story in the traditional sense, in that there was no monster as much as there was a apocalypse using a realistic kind of doomsday scenario that people always worry about, a super virus that couldn't be cured. It was a solid story, but kind of unremarkable at times, too. And I remember the lead in it being, despite being a doctor, he's kind of bad at his job.
Well, there's that one part that we harped on about where it was like the test came back negative for everything. That means it's not Ebola. Yes.
He's like, oh, phew. They're like, no, but you realize it's still something, right? We just don't know. He's like, oh, phew. It's not the one thing I was worried about. Then we did Devil Man.
Devil Man.
Which Nick made a theme song for, right there.
It's not, I didn't make that theme song. That's the theme song.
I deny that. I believe you made that theme song up right now.
Okay, so any time that I just, like, recite the title of a series, it's Emerging!
Yeah, exactly.
Fuwan no Tane!
See, they could have used you, Nick, in helping to pump those series up. You could be their hype man. after Halloween month was done, we finished off our JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, or JoJo Bizarre Pokemon Adventure for the year, I should say, with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Stardust Crusaders.
Mm-hmm. I had a great time doing that one.
Now it's another really long but really fun episode talking about all the craziness that is Dio and all the iconic parts of JoJo most people kind of at least know of from memes.
Yeah,
and
the fact
else.
That Stance came from it, of course.
Yep. Then we talked about butts a lot, because we talked about Kaijo.
Kaijo. Yeah.
Really all needs to be said. There was a lot of butts.
Butts,
and
butts, butts, butts.
Then we finished off the year with Skill of Lore, which we talked about just a week ago. Well, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, because we took a break.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was the year of recommendations in review.
I'm quite happy with the assortment that we got because, you know, we had, you know, reliable good series with Pokemon and JoJo. But we got some surprises in there as well that were nice little pleasant bits. Like Skill of Lore was a nice pleasant surprise. And then we got bad series, too, which was something that I begged people to send us at the beginning of the year, and we definitely got them.
Yeah.
Not like we were, you know, covered in them, but definitely, you know, had three or four that we could point to and be like, yeah, that was bad.
It was not enjoyable.
So, good stuff.
Yeah. Because of the fact that we did JoJo and Pokemon this year, I found it hard to kind of, because usually we pick out like three series we really liked and three we didn't like at all and kind of share them. I didn't feel comfortable saying like, well, JoJo's part two would definitely be on my list because, you know, I've already talked about that before. So I basically have one recommendation out of that I really liked and then, one of the, that I really hated.
And I think that you should go first because I do have three of each. And okay. You can only step on one third of my picks, whereas I could potentially step on
wipe out mine.
Yeah, you just like make yours completely unnecessary.
So my favorite series, it's not like the JoJo or anything like that we recapped this year, was Shinsuke no Iron Maiden. It's a series that really surprised me with how enjoyable it was despite what its premise made it seem. You know, it really came across like it would be a very, you know, fan service, goofy, just ridiculous story, but it had a very earnest kind of romance underneath it that I really appreciated. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it was one of those nice surprises to get where you're like, I thought I was going to hate this, and I ended up kind of liking it a lot. So I enjoyed that one quite a lot.
I'm actually a little bit surprised by that. I don't know. I think that I kind of remember because I remember more of what I had to say during that discussion, and I remember having a lot of negative to say about it, but I do remember that we both kind of came away from it, despite all of that, having a higher opinion than what we expected from the premise and from the first chapter alone.
Mm-hmm. My least favorite this year was Erger. I don't really need to explain.
I mean, that's not surprising in the slightest.
It's weird because I laugh when I think about Air Gear and I'm like, man, what a silly, goofy series is. Ha ha ha. It's so dumb. And it's almost like a joke in my mind. And I start thinking about it more and more and I just start getting like irrationally angry. And I'm like, I need to stop thinking about this fucking series. It pisses me off too much.
So I'll go through now. Number three on my best, I put Ajin. It was something that it's something that I think that I need to get back to reading because I haven't read it since we did the cover of it. But, it was just an interesting story with an interesting idea that played with the powers that it introduced really well. And on top of that, a lot of the characterization in it is actually really good. I remember really liking the stuff that was done with the protagonist in terms of how he was very different, for a hero of that type of series, had very little empathy for the type of character that he was. Number two, I have Skill of Lure. I really liked that series. We talked about it just a couple of weeks ago, like you said, and really grew to like the main characters and in the relationship that they ended up having together. Also, really, really, really nice to look at art. Mm-hmm. Number one, I have A Silent Voice.
Yes.
Because it made me fucking feel things.
Like, it broke this cold, bitter heart of mine.
I do have a cold and bitter heart. The stuff that happens, like, that the sequence of chapters where you see inside of each character's head and find out what each of them are thinking in sequence after you've seen everything just from one character's perspective the whole time. And, you know, that imagined world where she can hear, but she doesn't know what sounds, you know, are. So even in her imagination, it's all distorted. She doesn't quite understand how it all sounds. She just imagines how happy she would be if she could hear music. That's really, really got to me.
My real favorite of the year was Keiju, because I love butts. That was a weird face to make for the company in that statement.
I was trying to make it weird, at least. My worst list. Okay, so number three, I have Akisora.
Okay,
not surprised. That's number three.
I know. I'm like trying to scan. I can figure one at least. I'm definitely trying to wonder. I was like, ooh, what else fits in there?
Akisora is probably objectively actually the worst series we looked at, in terms of quality, but when you consider the fact that it is just pure smut that made the mistake of trying to be more than smut, and also when you consider the tremendous amount of joy that we were experiencing while talking about how terrible it was, I can't hate it and put it, I can't hate it more than that. I can't put it at the top of the list. It's not a series that made me angry in the slightest. So I don't really have any negative feelings associated with it. It's just, it was so bad that you had to laugh at it. Series I did have negative feelings towards was number two, Air Gear.
You didn't love it?
There you go. It was really bad. There were things, I'm not sure if it was worse or just on par with what you had told me about it. Cause honestly, like, I think that if I had just experienced it on its own without the context of this is, you know, like the one of the worst series that you'd ever read and, you know, spending years being built up to it, I feel that I would have hated it more just because of the shock of how stupid so much of it is. That said, it is still really bad. Ikki is a goddamn terrible hero. There is really weird fan service. Almost every female character is, like, transparently a sex object. Fight scenes tend to make no sense. Lots of characters are flat out wasted. And just a lot of them are generally unlikable, and a lot of the way the series works is stupid. There you go.
No, Nick, let's spend another hour and a half talking about Air Gear again.
Another special episode we could do. Guys, I know that you were thinking that we would just, you know, look back on the entire past year, but no, look. There were almost 400 chapters of Air Gear.
You don't understand.
There's so much to talk about.
One episode in a bonus podcast isn't enough.
It's nothing. This is now Air Gear manga recap.
My life spiraled into that kind of depression.
My number one least favorite this year was Today Love Starts. Because it was one of those things that got to me on a level where, like, it presents the world in a way that angers me in terms of how its characters feel emotion. I mean, it is probably the closest thing that we're ever going to get to, like, 50 Shades of Grey levels of romanticized abuse in a manga. It's so bad, and it made me so angry. Like, that has to be, like, a recurring thing for me, like, with my least favorite stuff that we've done for Week of Manga Recap, is not in terms of how illogical a story is, although it is illogical, or how, you know, how, what the quality of the art or the writing is. It's just, it comes up with an idea that just offends me on a deep and personal level. Like, you know, Usagi Drop did the same thing, or it just angered me so much that I could not look at the good qualities of it. It made me so angry. Like Spider-Man, where it ruined one of my superheroes, and I was like, fuck all of this. So that's my choice.
Makes sense. I could dig it. Well, there we go. We had an interesting year, I think, more or less. As you said, we had a nice kind of diversity to it. I'm looking forward to what we do in 2017, though. I'm kind of interested to see if we'll hit upon something new we haven't touched on, or if maybe we hit upon any big series we haven't covered or things like that. You know, we often get people asking if we're ever going to do something like, you know, a Full Metal Alchemist or Dragon Ball, and it's like, yeah, they're all options, so who knows? Let's see what the year brings. Although we still also, as we mentioned, have plenty of JoJo and Pokemon to get through, too, so
yeah.
A lot of stuff to look forward to. With that, let's turn to our series that we generally recap in 2016.
So this is the part of the show where Nick has his knowledge of the past tested. It's been a growing tradition over the last couple of years.
So we'll start off. We'll go right down in the alphabetical order we usually do everything in. So where do you think Black Clover was at the start of the year?
I think that I don't believe that they had introduced Leash yet. but it was like right before that when they were fighting with the scientist girl and her mud minion guy.
Yeah, you're basically spot on. It was the fight against Sally, and Gaush has the change of heart and comes back to help Asta. So,
and I will, just full disclosure on this, I might be a little bit more accurate this year because I compiled the results of the favorite series and MVP list. And so just by having to look at, okay, well, Leashed was like, you know, an MVP, then that kind of triggers a memory. It's like, okay, that was what was happening. But so, if there wasn't an MVP for a series at that point, then I'm a little bit in the dark.
So from that time with Black Clover, we had the entire fight of Leashed all through 2016. The, like, six different people that show up to beat the shit out of him. There's the entire Water Temple arc that takes place in there. And then everything that we've had thus far with the Witch Forest arc. I don't know what we'd call this one, but the light novel arc, I guess you'd call it.
Right.
So it's weird. I feel like a lot happened in Black Clover, but at the same time, I feel like not a lot happened in Black Clover since the the past two arcs have kind of felt very similar in that way.
Yes.
And the Leashed part kind of dragged on for so long, even though I recognize, like, hey, essentially three arcs took place in the span of a year. I'm also looking at, like, it kind of only feels like maybe, like, one and a half kind of took place. Where do you think Bleach was at the start of this year, Nick? Because Bleach ended this year.
Yes.
But
they were in the midst of the fights with the four elite general guys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly where it was. I think that they were past Pernita. I'm not sure how far beyond that. I think that they were in the middle of Shunsui and Nanao versus Lulibaro.
It was in the middle of the fight with Askanok Lavar. It was right after.
Okay.
It was right after Yorichi's brother showed up and like looked like he beat him, and everyone was like, "This ain't gonna happen."
What the fuck?
I'm not buying this for a hot second. So yeah, the whole
So Yoroichi's lightning cat fetish thing happened right at the start of the year. What a way to kick things off.
Oh, and don't forget Urahara jamming her in the butt with a syringe that she didn't know about that basically turned her into a docile concubine.
Putting something in her ass that she didn't want to that turned into... God.
That was a really fucked up moment. Yeah, so there was the whole fight with Askanok Lavar, there was the stuff with Gerard and his, like, continuous comebacks, there was the Hoshwalt stuff, and then there was, you know...
The most anticlimactic conclusion.
Yeah, and then there was essentially just the ending of all of it.
Guys, stop fighting, it's time for the final battle.
In true to Bleach form, the series, you know, that's what was the start of 2017, it lasted until August... It still feels like nothing happened in that time frame.
Really?
Because you look at it, there was no resolution to the fight with Gerard. He just got, like, soul powered.
Yeah, 8 months for... 8 months for four battles, basically. Because there would have been the Askanok Lavar fight, the Gerard fight, the Hoshwalt fight, and the Yuvabak fight. So two of those didn't have any resolution, really, because Yuvabak just, you know, zapped their powers away. And then... That final fight with Yuvabak was pretty anticlimactic because it was like, oh no, the silver arrowhead has struck me. I lost my power, but I broke your Bankai. Yeah, but I'm not going to use that Bankai, which has been built up for the past several years because I had to do special Bankai training to get it reforged, but here's the old sword that isn't Bankai.
Oh no.
I have been defeated by lazy writing.
Yeah, we're going to touch on that a lot more with the bonus pod that's going to be coming out hopefully sometime this next month. But there's a lot of strong feelings towards that ending.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, not a great year for Bleach.
Mostly just kind of general disappointment.
We had Tekken on during those episodes, too. We had him on to talk about the end of Bleach.
Talk about the end of the show, yeah. And he wasn't especially happy either.
I really have not seen many people who were, so...
I don't know if there is a single person who was, like, 100% satisfied with that ending. Because, like, how could you be, honestly?
Yeah. Fairy Tail, Nick. Where was Fairy Tail at the start of this year?
This is where it gets hard.
I would say this is impossible. Because you had to consider the breakneck pace that Fairy Tail moves at.
Exactly. So much has happened in Fairy Tail. Like, because I think half the Spriggan 12 was defeated before being brought back. I think that half of them that got defeated happened just this year, which when you consider how long it got, I know that sometime at some point early on, Wall and Laxus fought. I don't think that's exactly where they started the year, but unfortunately, I don't remember the order of things that happened in Fairy Tail because it's just been a long string of fights with the Spring and 12 this year, and I don't remember the order that they happened in. So I'm going to say it was when Wall beat up Laxus's friends to piss him off.
Unfortunately, Nick, the chapter in which this year started with Fairy Tail was when we found out Natsu has super cancer.
Really?
Yeah, it was when Natsu, like, falls over and Nuzi's like, what's happened?
That it was that long ago? God.
So, in the span of Fairy...
Feels like that happened in July.
In the span of Fairy Tail, Natsu got magic cancer. The whole resolution of Brandish turning quasi-face.
Right.
There was Wendy and Cherie versus Di Maria.
There was God, yeah, that happened.
Urza versus Reinhardt, who revived all the memories. There was Gajeel versus Bradman and his supposed death.
I remember.
The return of the other girl from Fairy Tail Zero.
Zero.
There was Makarov's sacrifice. There was Gray
versus... Which has held up so far.
Yeah, good for you. There was Gray versus that one ice dude, whose name I've forgotten. There was Gray versus Natsu.
Uh-huh.
And now the Stingless versus the Carne fight, which just wrapped up with...
Plus one of our what-the-fuck moments of the year, but we'll talk about that later, because it's best remembered in that context.
So, Fairy Tail easily has the most productive year of any series, but that's mostly just because Fairy Tail moves at that ridiculously high pace. I even forgot to mention it here, but there's also the Lucy versus Lassim fight, or Jacob fight. I forget which name he went by.
Oh my god, thing.
There was another one in there to even consider. So, big year for Fairy Tail. Not particularly a great year for it, though, unfortunately.
I mean, has it had a particularly great year while we've been covering it?
not while we've been covering really. It, in my mind. But
Fairy Tail is Fairy Tail. That's all you need to know.
Food Wars. Nick, what do you think Food Wars was at the beginning of the year?
Oh, this is also a little bit difficult. I mean, because I could tell you probably, like, a sequence of events. I think... Okay, hang on.
That's right, Nick. If you don't get this right, I'm killing your cat.
Boop, 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 boom. Okay. I'm trying to remember based on, like, I'm kind of trying to remember a baseline of Weekly Manga Recap Lives that we did.
All right. There's not $1 million at the end of this question, Nick. Give me an answer.
Okay, I think that like the subgroup of the counts of Central was introduced. I'm going to say it was during Soma's battle with Azon.
It was actually right after that. It was the party. It was the party celebrating his defeat, the victory over Aizen, wherein Azami shows up at the end. So it was basically just a little bit afterwards. But after that, as you said, we had the start of the rebellion with the Polaris Storm and a couple other people. There was the introduction of Rentaro, the fight with him and Kurokiba. There was Alice, like, declaring, I'm angry what you did to my cousin. There was then the Soma versus Tsukasa match was in there. And then it was essentially the rest of the advancement exams and then the Hayama match that just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Which was kind of weird to me. I feel like I thought more happened. And looking at it, I mean, there are kind of like three distinct little like sub-arcs within that. None of them particularly long. But I don't know why. I felt like I thought more happened in Food Wars this year than actually did. I don't know.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And if there is truth to the idea of the advancement exam was fast-forwarded, you can kind of see why.
Yeah. But, yeah, so the year ended with the whole Azami stuff, or not Azami, Juichiro stuff, so that's where we're at now. But I thought, by and large, Food Wars was a little bit mixed this year. I mean, there were some good points to it, and some different points I think we were really excited for it, but the promise...
When you consider that last year, Food Wars was one of the best series of the year.
Yeah.
kind of fell back to earth a bit.
I think the promise of what this year or last year gave us, I'm still waiting for the return on. You know, I'm waiting for Alice to have that moment where she really takes it to a zombie and actual battle, not just tells them off. I'm waiting for that moment where the Council 10 really puts themselves against Soma and his group, and we see like intense battles that way. You know, we got a little bit of it with Hayama having that kind of payoff, but I think there's still a lot to do, and you know, we kind of lost a little bit of the mystique of a zombie in that way.
Yes.
Moving on to My Hero Academia.
They were in the special camp training with the invasion.
Yes. The series began this year literally with the end of it being that the League of Villains showed up, the Vanguard unit showed up and were attacking. So there was actually a lot to My Hero this year.
Oh, yeah.
There was, because that was the start of the Vanguard group attacking. There were still all the fights that happened there within. You know, you had some of the smaller fights like Tetsu.
There was the introduction of all the new villains in the Villain Alliance. Especially the ones that didn't get captured right in the middle of it. Twice was in that group.
Yeah.
Their magician. Dobby.
Mm-hmm. So we got a lot there. Then there was the whole Bakugo getting kidnapped thing, which led into the fight between All Might and All for One, which was a huge turning point in the series. Then there was the training arc where Deku developed shoot style. Then there was the entire hero license exam. And then even after that, still within the same year, we got the Bakugo versus Deku fight that capped everything off and kind of put us into a new direction going forward between those two. So it was a pretty crazy year, actually. It ended a little bit, not weak, because I actually really loved the Deku and Bakugo stuff. The hero exam itself didn't quite hit what I hoped it would, mostly just because it kind of felt like some of the motivations that got placed to some of the new characters didn't really feel like it fit very well. And it also may have just been the lack of a presence of, like, the actual villains in the series, although we did find out one of them was masquerading within it. But I thought overall this was a really crazy strong year. You know, I didn't even with that. I did mention like some of the hilarious chapters, like when they go to everybody's rooms and that whole like sequence of chapters where they just like show off and it's like, oh my god, Tokoyami, you're such an edgelord loser.
That's one of my that's probably actually one of my favorite sets of chapters of the whole year. Was just, you know, there's all these characters that we really haven't gotten to know very well, and the way that they play off of each other, and you know how much you can learn about a character by just what they keep around their room.
Yeah.
And how Deku really is just a total nerd.
And I think this is the year also where we really got a strong push forward in the idea that it's not just Deku, Bakugo, and like Ida or Uraraka as the main characters. We really saw that it's the entirety of Class A, which is kind of like the major supporting cast here, because there were so many side characters who got their moments in the sun. Even if they were small, limited ones, almost everyone has gotten a part to be like part of one of the major groups that Deku's in, or have their own solo fight or moment to really show off everything that makes them who they are. And the promise of them only getting more of it is coming in the future, I feel. So I thought this was a really good year for My Hero Academia. A couple hiccups along the way, but definitely the most significant of any series this year and what it did.
Yeah.
Nisekoi, I don't know if you remember where it was at the start of this year.
I think that they were trying to rescue Marika from her marriage.
No, it was actually before that. It was a good deal before that. When Raku finally realized that Chichoge loves him. And essentially the rest of the year then going forward was kind of cleaning up the rest of the harem to settle their feelings with them before finally the conclusion. So a fine year for Nisekoi, you know, it kind of it went good off
conclusion.
On its own. Yeah, it went on. It, you know, in comparison, especially the Bleach, who had ended in the same week as a really good series that got to end on its own terms. So that was really nice.
Between the three series that finished, I would say it had the most satisfying conclusion.
Yes. One Piece. Where do you think One Piece was at the start of this year, Nick?
I know this almost exactly.
Okay.
They were on Zoa. And
wrong, we were still in Dressrosa. Go ahead.
Fuck you. They it was basically right.
I feel like you're trying to attack me with your psychic powers.
It was right before.
Like you're trying to access Cerebro to destroy my mind.
That's not what Cerebro does.
It did in X2 with evil Xavier being controlled.
It's because they contaminated.
I know, but anyway, still.
It was right before they got the explanation of the road poneglyphs.
Yeah, essentially it was, we were still within the flashback of what happened with Sanji's group on Zo and what led them to leaving. So it was basically the reveal that Big Mom's team had followed them from Dressrosa to Zoa. And then we followed with everything from there, which is kind of weird because I felt like more happened this year in One Piece than really did. I mean, as you said, we got the explanation about the red poneglyphs. We got the introduction of Cat Viper and Dog Storm and all the minks. We got the, you know, introduction of Jack, a glimpse at Vivi again, the promise of some big events going on in the past or in the future. And then the start of the Big Mom arc, which gave us Sanji's whole backstory, introduced us to the large group of Germa 66, gave us all these various characters within Mom's group, and then just recently ended with giving us the revelation that Pudding was evil all along as well.
It was me, Sanji!
But it is kind of weird, because I feel like at the same time that there was all that not a lot actually happened in One Piece either. You know, we did get some cool little bits to the world and the lore and things of that nature, but I certainly didn't feel like this was a jammed-packed year. It was kind of a slower year.
It was not a slow year. It was not unentertaining, but it was one of those things that really made you look forward to the future more than anything else.
Yeah, I think we're
I
in
mean,
the...
we just had Dressrosa with Doflamingo being defeated, so it's understandable to build up the next bit.
That was an arc essentially like 3 years long too. So yeah, that was all that. But One Piece I thought was pretty good this year. It was definitely a really enjoyable one, but I think, as you said, it's kind of that slow build-up into everything. Then, this didn't start this year, but I'll just mention The Promised Neverland started this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still going on right now. It's going strong in Japan, so it seems like it's a series that's going to be running for quite some time. Really enjoyable series. We found out quite a lot thus far, but there's still a lot of the mystery to kind of find out. We're still not entirely sure everyone's stance. We don't really know how things are going to go from here. There's a lot of players at work and kind of exciting to guess and see what's going to happen each week. It's been easily one of the most pleasant surprises in manga this year for me. I like Promised Neverland kind of came out of nowhere and really just took off and hasn't really like slowed down or really had like a boring like drop off of build up. Almost every chapter kind of leaves you on a note of like, all right, now I have to think about this or something at least.
Mm-hmm.
Then Toriko, Nick. Where was Toriko at the start of this year? And you can't just say Acacia. That doesn't count.
Oh, God. Fuck.
I can almost guarantee you won't get it.
I'm not going to tap out on this one. I'm going to take a shot in the dark. Okay. I am going to say... No, that's not early enough. Shit. Wait. I think that he was fighting with minor characters. It was before even that, Nick.
This was the start of this year. Was after he had sent off all of his spawns, and those were all fighting the Eight Kings. So this is before anyone even was really fighting Acacia, because he had just sent out his spawns, and like, it would be like, one woke up and saw Nightmare, and Nightmare was like, you shall not be on my land, and shoved it into the ground with a fucking, yeah, like they all did their big things, and nothing really worked. But this is before anyone actually really fought against Acacia. There was still the entire fight with Jiro and Acacia to do with Jiro's death. There was still everything to do with Midora and his thing with Froze and then him eventually coming back. There was still the entire thing with Toriko and his demons and that long exaggerated fight. And then eventually the conclusion, which is weird because Toriko ended in November. So essentially a full year of Toriko ran. But it still doesn't feel like a lot happened in that. But to be fair, it was, as we've come to find out, the final fight of the series, which usually tends to be kind of, like, dragged out, like, false finishes and a lot of kind of, like, slow build-up to a payoff. So I guess it makes sense that Acacia was the majority of the year, but it doesn't feel like a whole lot happened, in all I was thinking.
Not really.
We still did get a great penultimate chapter, though, so... Finally, Nick, where was World Trigger at the start of 2016? This one, of all the ones going back...
Wait, hang on, stop. Okay. I believe that they were going into a rank war, and then we cut away to whatever the fuck the secondary neighbor kingdom was invaded.
Gallipoa? You're very close. It's actually after that.
Oh, really?
Of all the series I looked at where it was at the start of the year, this is the one that shocked me the most, because I thought a lot more happened in World Trigger this year, and I was very wrong. The first chapter was Gallipola is still invading, and Jin realizes that Yotaro is going after Husei. And
yeah.
They're like, holy crap. Nothing happened. Like, the only things after that are the two rank war battles.
A lot of those first chapters were very much like, well, nothing happened. So.
There was the whole fight with Gatlin, I think was his name, the guy with like the Dr. Octopus arms.
Yes.
And his son. That was like a really big fight going on, so there was a lot of things there. There actually were not.
See, my prediction came true that you would be cut down.
A lot of people are saying there were a lot of more breaks with World Trigger. There actually weren't. 2016.
There was just the one long break.
Yeah, has actually been a lot of no breaks with World Trigger, which was a welcome change for 2015, but then it happened at the end where the hiatus has come about. So for the most part, though, World Trigger was really constant, and that's why I was a little bit surprised. But yeah, there was the fight with Katori Squad. Little bit of like some stuff in between then, and then the fight with the Akoma Squad, Noji Squad, and that was it. I mean, you know, we had a little bit of build up at the end, but yeah, rank wars matches was essentially the grand majority of World Trigger's year.
The big thing that happened at the start of the year was Hughes deciding to join with Tamakoma 2, and when you consider the break, I mean, like we were just getting to the point where they were going to have their first rank war together. Unfortunately, before Ashihara Sensei fell ill,
I still don't think there's any word yet on when.
There's been no update as far as I know.
So I'm hoping Ashihara gets the best for 2017. I'm really hoping so.
It was Hunter Hunter at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, technically there was a fucking Hunter Hunter fucking return in this year.
How long did that last? Like a chapter?
I think it lasted.
Chapters?
It lasted a little bit longer than that, but I believe it was about the span of about a month and a half. It was not all that long.
And then it just went away with like nothing accomplished.
Yeah, Again, I don't like to say I told you so or anything like that, but it was the exact reason I was like, look, when this comes back, I'm not adding it to the recap again because I firmly believe it's not going to stick. And that's what happened. So it's like, yeah, if it comes back again, guys, that same logic is coming in. I'm not going to start recapping it again because I don't imagine it'll be in the magazine very much longer again.
B. Patton Odd in the chat says they got on a boat. And it's like, oh, yeah, I remember you going over that.
So that's where all of our manga were. In 2016, of course, we had our Jumpstart series that began and ended essentially either just in the U.S. Jump or the entirety of it. We had Amalgam of Distortion. We had...
Which is still going along with Spring Weapon and Ole Galasso and the one that... And Demon's Plan. All four of those are still going. But presumably some of them are going to end soon.
I should note, technically, Boruto isn't a jump start, but I believe Boruto has run its entire...
It does run in Weekly Shonen Jump.
Yeah, I think most of it ran in this year. I think it may have started at the end of last year, but for the grand majority of Boruto's running...
No, it started this year.
Did it? Okay. Well, it's bi-monthly, isn't it?
It's a monthly series.
Oh, it's a monthly. Okay, yeah, so yeah, we did get all of it then. Yeah, okay, because it was 8 chapters. So all of Boruto's ran thus far this year. Demon's Plan, as you said, Kimetsu no Yaiba, which I think is still running in Japan.
That's still going pretty strong.
Yeah, so that was one that didn't really seem to hold much over here, but is doing well in Japan. Love Rush, which...
I liked it, but didn't do so well.
Surprisingly, a lot of people really like Love Rush. We've had a lot of people lament that we didn't, like, commentate on it more. That I even have people angry I couldn't add it to the poll. And I'm like, look, guys, I only have 10 options for manga to pick this year, all right? But a lot of people really, really liked Love Rush. Ole Galasso, as you said. Red Sprite, which we read and we really enjoyed. We're hoping for more from that. Ruby Manga started this year, as everyone greatly beloves. Spring Weapon number one. And, of course, who could forget Takuan and Batsuo's Daily Demon Diary.
Now I have to see your underwear. There must be balance.
It was a legitimately funny moment, but still pretty weird. So that was all the 2016.
Like she was five.
That was our 2016 manga, Nick. I guess we'll save that for the end, after the Superlative Awards. We'll give out our best manga 2016.
Yes. Let's do our extra stuff. Let's have our 3-hour-long award ceremony.
We're going to start off
people off stage, because everyone thanks the Academy and their parents and all that shit.
We're going to start off... We won't start off with the biggest categories. We'll try to save those to you. Just like the real Academy Awards that make you wait until
Best
Director.
Hold on to the end in order to find out if Leonardo DiCaprio won.
So let's start
That's going to be the next thing that supposedly haunts him in his deepest, darkest nightmare. It's just the fact that he hasn't won a Weekly Manga Recap Supplementary Award.
He's like, soon. I was part of that one joke in Food Wars about that bear. Revenant 2.
One of my favorite jokes of the year, honestly.
I fucking love that.
Oh, no, I spilled hot sauce on myself.
This water balloon full of barbecue sauce got all over me. Better rub it in.
How am I going to fight this bear? No, I'll kick it in the nuts.
Just wandering into the woods with a baseball bat. I can't even kill this bear.
So is there some guy who's taking vengeance on him? No, it's just one man's very, very poorly thought out.
It's a very bad
determination
idea.
To stick with it.
Oh, man, that is a good one. All right. Let's start with the best new character, best new manga character, I should say, of 2016. And a lot of these suggestions were brought upon by you guys who sent us in your recommendations, your nominees. So of the four best new characters of 2016, Nick, there's Cat Viper from One Piece, Gang Orca from My Hero Academia, Ikuma from World Trigger, or Rei from The Promised Neverland.
I mean, honestly, it really depends on the route you want to go with this. You could just go with the option of who brought us the most joy.
Mm-hmm. That's where I think you'd want to go, right?
I mean, yeah, but you could also go in the... Because, like...
I mean, Rei's easily the most significant of that group, because he's
Rei's
the only
the
character.
Most significant, and he's been the most interesting... Oh, God, Ikoma's so funny.
I love
so consistently
Cat Viper.
Funny and badass, too. I feel like we wouldn't be being true ourselves if we didn't pick Ikoma, honestly.
He was a welcome breath of fresh air. Not that World Trigger needed him, but a character who was that blankly kind of simple-minded in the face of everything else.
I can't kill her. She's a cute girl.
You do it.
You're handsome. You can get away with it.
But how straight-faced he was about everything.
All right. So, yeah, I think we have to go with him.
Much in the same way, Nick, what was the best new design of 2016? Now, this can either be
There's a running theme on this one, I feel like.
There is. Now... It can either be a character who gets a new like redesign, or a character who just showed up for the first time and has a very interesting design. So our nominees are Hitsugaya, who showed up with his new coat at the start of Bleach this year. Didn't do anything, but he had a new coat. It was pretty snazzy. Leashed. A lot of people were We were impressed with Leash's new design. Hayama, with his villainous new
his badass winter furry coat.
Yeah. Acacia. After eating Neo, and he stopped looking so stupid with the big dumb nose.
It was in between when he started looking stupid again when he grew mouths everywhere.
And Yawaroshi with the Gale Force costume.
Yawaroshi.
Whatever, Nick. his Gale Force costume. I feel like I added Gang Orca on there, but I must have forgotten. Although I guess, no, it was, he did come in this year. Last minute edition, Nick. Gang Orca from My Hero Academia as well.
I mean, I don't really think that you can honestly go wrong in this list, except with Hitsugaya.
You mean the one that I added, I think, 2 weeks into the year? That just never got removed?
Pretty much, yes. I had that same coat when he was a zombie anyway.
Yeah, but he showed up and it looked cooler this time. That's why I made the list.
I think that if you look at it in terms of everything, because, I mean, yeah, Leech looked cool, and yes, Hayama and Yoarashi did get a nice, neat little outfit, but I think it has to come down to either Acacia or Gang Orca. Acacia had the most, was the most different, and had, I think, the most improved design because of how god-awful Neo on its own looked. Mm-hmm. And if you want to go with just best design for a brand new character, you got to go with Gang Orca. Although that's kind of cheating because he did exist in the previous series, but
yeah, still I suppose there's a little bit of a cheat there. But I almost feel like giving it to Gang Orca solely because it's a design that you don't see in anything else. Like Acacia becoming kind of like a Dragon Ball Z like villain is something like it's a design you kind of expect before, but I don't think anything is going to make a Gang Orca like character where he has a tie that's the tongue.
Yeah, tie is my tongue, yeah.
Yeah, and like the giant orca face and everything like that. So I'll defer to you, but I think
Gang Orca is a fine pick.
All right, Gang Orca, best new design in 2016. This one's tough because I feel like you almost need to see them.
You really do. I have looked at these previously, at least, though.
So, this is the nominees for the best two-page spread of 2016. And the nominees are Tokoyami Unleashed from My Hero Academia Chapter 78, which is where his shadow had essentially gone, like, hulked out and was raging, this giant two-page spread. It was screaming while kind of hovering off of himself. There was Chitoge's Love's, Tears of Love from Nisekoi Chapter 227, I think, which was basically like the end of the series where her and Raku kind of, get together and, have their sweet little moment. It was a little bit before that, I believe, because Nisekoi ended in August, if I recall correctly. But it was right around that time there was this big two-page spread of her off in like a field. And, it was very, very beautiful, I suppose. Asta.
I suppose.
I suppose. I don't remember it off the top of my head, so I'm deferring to you a little bit on these. Asta defeats Veto from Black Clover Chapter 71. This is the big two-page spread where he goes up and beats the shit out of him, and it's a crazy spread to look at because it's very chaotic. It's almost hard to read, and I mean that in the best kind of sense because it's a lot of emotion going into that panel and a lot of kind of epic swelling to it based on how kind of chaotic all of the lettering and all the line art and even the way the panels kind of fit together. So that one's very impressive. And then finally, United States of Smash from My Hero Academia Chapter 94, where All Might delivers his final attack on One For All.
I really don't like the Veto page, honestly.
Aww.
I do not enjoy it. I think that it is crowded and there are too many effects and it is difficult to tell what the hell is going on. So that's me.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah. I think that it's got to be United States of Smash, but I will say that I think that the other two are very good.
I
like seeing the shadow surrounding Tokoyami, and honestly, I remember the first time reading that chapter of Nisekoi, just how perfect that one image of Chitoge turning around was to cap up their conversation.
I want to go through and look at these one more time. So I'm gonna pull these up real quick. Once again, this is Nisekoi chapter 227, which came out in the July 25th issue of Shonen Jump. And is right towards the end of the magazine. So I want to look at these kind of side by side, because I do remember this Nisekoi one being pretty damn impressive. Yeah, that is pretty amazing. And let me just really quickly see the Tokuyomi one. Because to be completely honest, even though I love and, you know, appreciate how cool the All Might moment is, United States of Smash doesn't do a whole lot for me. Because you don't get a lot from that panel. It's kind of the aftermath where it really comes to effect.
I actually prefer the precursor immediately before it, where it's transitioning between him. It's basically when he starts rearing up until his fist first connects, and you see All For One's face distorting around his fist as he's getting punched.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one. Man, that's a tough one. Because the Tokuyomi one, that's a damn impressive art right there. Like, managing to capture a shadow in that way, you know, a living shadow with that much intensity.
Like, it looks like it's eating him.
Yeah. It looks like he's eating him, and that's just got to be a tough style to, like, actually draw something like that. Like, you have to kind of admire the impressiveness of it. It's a toss-up for me. Both of those are really impressive images. Looking between them, I think there's a little bit more going on in the My Hero one. But as a pure two-page spread, that's what the Nisekoi one is. So I think I might give it to Nisekoi.
I think I'm fine with any of those, honestly.
Executive decision, it's going to be Chitoge. And Nisekoi will take that for best two-page spread.
But Nisekoi wins an award.
Yeah.
From Z-Grade Podcasting.
Komi Sensei shows up and says, give me that latte. I'm like, no.
Thank you.
I start beating him with a broom. No, get out of here.
Go do no hearts again. No.
I'm going to save those ones for closer to the end. And we'll go over to best power of 2016, Nick. What was the best power? Our nominees are Crackers Biscuit Fruit from One Piece. Although, really, Cookie Fruit, let's be honest. The Brits don't have that. Gang Orca and his Orca powers.
Being an Orca.
From My Hero Academia.
If there's going to be one that has best description, it's that one. It's an Orca, but on land.
The Ikuma Whirlwind from World Trigger.
Coma.
The Meatball Power from My Hero Academia. Although I guess we had seen it before, so I guess it's not fair to say best power, but Osamu's spider could also probably qualify on its own.
I'm going to go with Meatball, honestly. Gang Orca is a badass, yes. I really liked the fight between Luffy and Cracker, and Ikuma Whirlwind is cool. But in terms of, like, most shocking, you would have to go with teenagers being turned into small balls of hamburger meat that could still feel pain. So it was the most surprising and most memorable to me.
Yeah, I do have a soft spot for Ikuma Whirlwind, especially in a series like World Trigger that doesn't have many techniques, per se. But, yeah, Meatball was such a crazy-looking power, and was pretty shocking once you saw it. So I'm feeling fair giving it to the Meatball power from My Hero Academia. Moving on, then. We'll do our best speech, or we want to save best speech to actually open up those chapters and go over the speeches first. I don't know if you want to open them up on your end, and we'll do another one in the meantime.
I may not remember them. I'll open them up, though.
All right, open up the best speeches, and in the meantime, we'll do the best fight of 2016, Nick. There were a lot of recommendations to this one. I had to cut several of them out just so we didn't have, like, 13 recommendations for this. But there's a lot of legitimacy, I think, in just about all of these.
Basically, we have a lot of fights to go over because we talk about a lot of shonen manga.
Which was weird, though, because, like, looking back, I was like, there weren't many good fights this year, but then I actually did, like, kind of go through them. I was like, oh, I guess there were a lot of, like, pretty significant fights this year. So we'll start off at the top of the list. I think this is the only place it comes in without an ironic sense to it. Fairy Tail, Laxus versus Wall, which I guess took place within this year.
I think that was probably the best fight in Fairy Tail this year.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that probably actually remotely approaches it is Brad and Gajeel.
Yes. Guys, Luffy versus Sanji is not a fight. That didn't happen. Sanji just beat up Luffy.
Sanji just kind of beat him up.
It's not a fight.
Sanji versus the human statue Luffy.
Urahara versus Asken Naklavar in Bleach. This was actually a really enjoyable fight in terms of Bleach. It was one of the few times, especially in the final arc, that it felt like a villain's defeat didn't feel like it kind of came out of nowhere.
Kind of come out of nowhere, honestly.
It did.
Backstabbed.
Almost literally came out of nowhere, since none of us had any idea where the fuck Grimmjow was, but.
Out of nowhere!
In everywhere, it was one of the few fights that felt satisfying. Both guys kind of showed off cool powers, there was a lot of fun little bits to everything there, and it was really enjoyable. This is what people suggested then, Luffy versus Cracker from One Piece. Kind of, it's tough to call it a fight in the same way as the other ones were, because we didn't really get much of this. It was sort of Luffy fighting.
Well, we caught snippets of it, because we cut away from it a couple of times.
But it's essentially, I think, why people like it is kind of almost that it becomes a squash match at the end of it, where Luffy finally just gets the upper hand and just beats the shit out of Cracker and one-hit KOs him. So I think a lot of people enjoyed it for that. And
it's a badass moment, and I like how, and it did a lot to establish how strong Big Mom's forces were, that one of the generals nearly defeated Luffy single-handedly. Mm-hmm.
Then there was, this is probably the biggest one, I think, of the year, the most significant, All Might versus All For One from My Hero Academia.
It's kind of unfair to all the other fights.
It is. It's a little unfair.
But it's such an important moment and has, you know, as badass a moment as United States of Smash in it. But, you know, even when you consider, I mean, it's honestly not the most action-packed out of them, but, you know, the stuff that All For One does, combining all the different quirks together and almost doing it more to show off than to win, the back and forth that they have verbally, and the image of All Might protecting the flame of One For All while he's struggling to carry on the battle. It's really not fair, but it's the only right answer, I think.
There's still two other nominees, though, and Annalise wants the category to be the best fights besides that.
That might be appropriate, but...
World Trigger had a really good fight. Tamakoma 2 versus Akoma Squad versus OG Squad. That's sort of the last rank war match we had of World Trigger.
It was a really good rank war.
It was really surprising how well executed, how kind of really well paced it was, how everyone kind of seemed to have their ups and downs and showed their strengths and had really just great individual moments across the board from characters.
I think it says something for World Trigger as a whole that's, you know, one of my favorite moments in a battle was Chika doing a little hop.
Yeah.
Like that. Just that.
Just her playing mind games. Mm-hmm. Really good
mind
fight.
Mind games.
And one from Black Clover, which was Veto versus Asta, Vanessa, and Fenrir. Although I guess you could also say Asta, Vesta, Vanessa, and Fenrir versus, I don't know, fucking whatever dude they're fighting in their current arc that they're doing to say Fauna. Same fight.
That might have stood a greater chance if they hadn't done the same thing again.
Yeah. But still, that fight in and of itself was a pretty enjoyable one. But yeah, I think as you said, All Might vs. All For One, I don't know if it's the best executed fight of all of them, but it's certainly the one that had the most emotional weight behind it. None of the other ones were as significant to their series.
Best fight of the year, Ikoma versus Gang Orca. I'm glad that we've gotten to the point where people just have, like, these favorites, like, as kind of a community.
So, yeah.
Not Sanji versus Luffy.
What's the fight? So, yeah, we'll give that one to All Might versus All For One. Probably the only fair way of doing it. No, if I had to pick a back, if I had to pick the runner up to it, like if you ignored that fight, I would probably give it to Tamakoma 2, Akoma Squad, OG Squad. I think
absolutely.
That was a really excellent fight. So, that is our best fight of the year. Let's do a best speech. Do you have those open?
Yes.
Okay.
We've got two from My Hero Academia and then one from Toriko.
Yes. So, Our first from My Hero came very early on in the year, and this is Deku from chapter 105.
That's not especially early. That was about midway through.
Yeah, I guess it feels earlier, I guess.
It was during the provisional license exam that it happened.
Yeah, that is true. But
now that I've undercut you, you want to go over one?
Yeah, now that you just smashed
now that I've talked about how unreliable Eddie you are.
You talked about wanting to be there if he was only... Who cares?
Question your authority and your reliability.
It was this really cool speech where Deku made mention of the fact that he wanted his legs to be stronger. And, you know, so much of the reason why is because he talks about how 1 or 2 seconds could have changed so many things. And how if he had only been faster, he could have changed so many events. And how important that was to him as a hero. I don't know if you have the exact quote he has up there. But... Mm-hmm.
I chose to fight, I busted out my arms. If they hadn't been broken, I might have been able to steal back Ka-Chan. If I'd succeeded, then maybe All Might wouldn't have had to fight All for One. Back then, if only I'd carried Kota back to Aizawa-sensei. If only I'd run away faster than that villain could follow. I'm training now with a focus on my legs because I should have gotten there faster.
It's a really cool speech. It was a nice way of showing why Deku has changed his focus, why he's kind of moved his new style, and it was nice to kind of get this kind of very heroic speech from him, too, of talking about how he's like, oh, if only I could have been there faster, how much... You can see how much of the responsibility of his dedication to being a hero weighs on him, so it's a really enjoyable one.
There's also that moment where he saves Toga, who was disguised as Uraraka, and he reveals afterwards that he knew that she wasn't Uraraka from the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's a cool moment where he's just like, oh, well, you know, he's a hero anyway. He did that big diving save despite the fact that she wasn't his friend.
This one's too long for us to read all the way through.
It is way too long.
This is a damn great speech. This is Midoriya reading off his full course menu from chapter 385 of Toriko, where he talks about how his full dish is all the memories he shared with his mother Froze, that his drink is like the kisses she kissed upon his cheeks, or
meat dish of my full course meal is a feeling that still lingers on my forehead even now, her goodnight kiss. You and your Oedipus complex!
It's such a stupid concept, but it's so perfect with Toriko, because he's talking about how his entire full course menu, this thing that's built up with tangible items throughout the entire series, are all just the, you know, various different, like, affectionate moments he got to share with his mother and his family. Mm-hmm. And it's so sappy, it's so schmaltzy, but it's so awesome at that same way, because it can only exist within Toriko.
Froze's smiling face, that's my main dish.
Like, come on, man. That's amazing. If you deny that, then I don't know why you're reading manga.
Pretty much exactly that.
Our final nominee for the best speech, this one happened just the other day, basically.
Very recently, yes.
We already mentioned it at the time, but this is All Might explaining to Deku and Bakugo why they need to learn from one another, because it's not just about winning and it's not just about saving, that they can save, or they can win by saving and save by winning. He has his big speech to the two of them to kind of get them to settle mm-hmm. their differences. Chapter 120.
I love to win just like you, Bakugo. And like Midoriya, I strive to save those in need. If either aspect was missing, I could never have stood for justice in the way I did. Midoriya looks up to your strength, Bakugo. And Midoriya, Bakugo fears your spirit. You've both just laid everything bare, so can't you see now? If you can learn to respect each other and let each other lift each other higher, you could become the ultimate heroes. Ones who save by winning and win by saving.
Yes. People are wondering why there weren't more. We didn't actually get a lot of nominees for this one.
Not a whole lot.
A lot of the ones we got, though, there were some very good ones. Like, I wanted to put in Alice's speech to Azami. There weren't, like, those were good moments, but they weren't speeches in quite the same way that I think we were kind of looking for. And I don't know why people keep saying Brook to Big Mom. You're technically spoiling things that haven't happened yet, because I don't think Brook's actually said anything to Big Mom yet.
Spoilers.
So there were some good ones, but, you know, this is why we kind of asked for nominations, because, you know, we go through the series every week, and it's hard to remember all the times that they happen.
A lot of stuff kind of mushes together occasionally.
So that's why we rely on you guys. But I firmly believe all three of those speeches right there are really awesome moments. My personal favorite is Midori's Full Course Menu.
I mean, absolutely.
It's so stupid, but so perfect in that way. It's quintessential manga where you're like, this is incredibly dorky, but God, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we're unanimous on that. We're giving it to Midori's Full Course Menu. Now our big awards are left, so we'll move to some of the goofier ones. Who was the best WMR-created character this year, Nick?
So our nominees for this are, we've got two from Food Wars to start things off. We've got the Polaris Dorm Bro Dudes.
Yes. Who are just
the two characters whose names we don't even remember that, because we had to do voices for them when they were going off to investigate with Hisako, we just kind of off the cuff turned them into total bros.
We're such assholes too.
You gotta wear your backwards visor, man.
Oh, bro, I'm so swole today. How could I forget?
And we've also got the Totsuki Institute accountant, a more recent creation when talking about the, winter advancement exams, the amount of money that must be thrown around in order to have these stupid high schoolers taken to place just to take a stupid advancement exam.
For all the money that school has to waste on pure spectacle, they're like, hey, you know, it costs a lot of money to close the roof. Why don't we just keep it closed during the fall classic? They're like, no, keep it open. We want to make sure that the contest ends when the moon's directly overhead. He's like, why don't you just get a clock? That'd be a lot cheaper. They're like, no. stop with your stupid opinions.
Like, I think that the thing that we noted on was that an extra bus had accompanied them to one destination. There was nobody riding the bus there. It was just there to take them back.
That's right. They all looked out the window to see, like, that's the bus that'll take you home if you lose. And, like, some dude had to be like, so we're renting a second bus. Like, they're not all going back home on the same bus. This is a bus that's separate from the bus that took them there. They could just as easily
take them back. It drove out with them just so that they could point to it and say, that's the one that will take you back.
You got so much money for this.
Honestly, I think that's one of those jokes that the more you focus on, the more ridiculous the series gets.
Then, of course, there was the Mark Wahlberg Baron Tamago character.
We're not gonna forget him. I don't think anytime soon. And then one that's fallen a little bit by the wayside. Living on in the spirit of Unohana, who is dead and never coming back, who is officially dead and never coming back now, so I can't. Thank God I don't have to remember to continue that joke anymore. For Black Clover, we have Rebecca, who's never going to be an important character.
Never, Nick, never. No. She's probably not going to even show up again. Maybe in like one of those like, you know, like at the end of Scrubs when he's walking down the hallway and he sees all these various characters from his past. Maybe there'll be a moment like that where Rebecca shows up at the end and everyone's like, who's that? Oh, it's that chick he had a crush on, that one. Whatever. She won't be an important character, Nick. She's never going to show up again. She's certainly not going to have to rescue her family at some point.
The unfortunate thing was that, yeah, we went through, you know, the rescue, and then she still showed up like one more time while you were still doing that joke, just to try it home. And then, like, she hasn't shown up since.
But they keep including her in, like, those fucking, like, harem pictures, so I feel like she's going to show up again. Well, I should say she might, but personally, she's never going to be an important character, so we're not going to have to see. We're not going to see.
Never going to be drawing color again. No.
No, definitely not.
I like all of the characters that we have come up with.
Here's the thing. I think it's unfair for us to pick this one. Because it's almost like we're, you know,
picking
our own favorite.
That's tooting your own horn. Yeah.
I don't think that's up for us to decide. So, to the people who are listening, you tell us what you thought your favorite WMR creator like, character
is. Are we just going to see if we can keep track as the comments scroll by, or?
Yeah, I mean, I'm already seeing kind of a theme with people in the chat already talking about it, but, we do that, or maybe I'll put up a straw poll, and,
we might not need that.
There's a lot of people who are saying they love the Baron Tamago Mark Wahlberg. So,
We'll put up a straw poll just in case, though.
Yeah, so we'll put.
And guys, keep in mind this is stuff we came up with like this year. Mm-hmm. So Unohana, no, that's a veteran. She's going in the Hall of Fame in terms of created characters.
She's our WWE Donald Trump in the celebrity ring. She's always there.
Oh no! Oh god! Okay.
Yeah. And now we have the biggest what the fuck moment of 2016. There probably should be more on here.
There probably should be.
And honestly, it's tough not putting like six different moments from Bleach this year in there.
Or from Air Gear.
Yeah. Well, I try not to go with recommendations so much. But these ones, all three of the ones that are on here are literal moments where I think we, at the time, were like, what the fuck? Like, even within the show itself. So it starts, I'm actually going to start from the bottom and work my way up. So,
yes.
Chad becomes a boxer for the final chapter of Bleach. It's one of those moments that it's like, I can't cut, why?
Why when? Only, okay, Ishida becoming a doctor, but only Chad otherwise gets that career explanation.
A career that's so contrary to his character comes out of no, why? I have heard people say the orgasm magic one should be on there. Maybe it should be. It could be considered an unofficial fourth one in here, kind of like adding gang work in the last moment. Guns in Space from Torrico. This is a moment. As many times as I see it, I still don't understand what it is.
Keep in mind, that's the last image that Torrico ended on.
Yeah, it's credits from there, and it's like, okay, I get it. Giant snake in space. Okay, sure. It's the world of Torrico. Oh, it's like a planet that has a donut for a ring. Why not? It's Torrico. Why are there guns in space? Just giant guns.
Well, I think my favorite moment of that was the fact that you hadn't seen it the first time you read through it. It was only when we were going through the chapter that you realized, wait a minute, there are guns.
It's like, why? Why are there guns in space? There's no context for it. It's not as though like anyone's gone to space in a Torrico flashback before and they've been like, oh, there's a revolver over there next to that planet. There's just giant guns out there.
And there's someone like, hey, why have we never looked out and seen guns out there? Does looking at a telescope into space get us food somehow? No.
It is insane. But our other biggest what the fuck moment of the year, I think people may have forgotten this one, but at the moment I sure as fuck
for me, this has to do it, honestly, because, okay, look, the other two are details. Mm-hmm. You know, there are bits where it's like, huh, that's kind of weird. You can, obviously we had a big freak out. It was like, what the fuck is that? But okay, there were guns in space in Torrico. Didn't that lead to any bigger implications about the series? Chad becomes a boxer, but it's right at the end. This, it's what the fuck, not just because it comes out of nowhere, but because you have to say what the fuck to the character responsible as well.
And it accomplished nothing.
It accomplished negative.
You may have forgotten this, but there was a point when Brandish is, reconciling with August, and she's basically convincing him not to fight the rest of the fairy tale members, and she's easing them up on their conquest. And then out of fucking nowhere, Mess shows up and betrays the shit out of him by stabbing him with the sword and acts like he just got one over on the guy. He's like, yeah, I got him! And everyone's like, why? What did you do this for? He was coming around!
And then August blew them up.
And August got super pissed off. He's like, I stabbed this dude with a sword in like the side. He's dead now. He's never gonna use magic. You're like, why did you do this, Mest? Is this the sole reason you came around was just
and
fucking
let's, up? Let's go over this in a little bit more detail too. Because it's not just that Mest gets August stabbed by a sword. He causes Brandish to see August as her grandfather. And is like, I've always seen you as my granddaddy. And then she goes, I always hated my grandfather.
He basically mind controlled her to stab August.
Because he altered her memories. Double. And by the way, yeah, where the hell is Mest in all of this now? What happened to him?
Who cares? He is the most worthless member of Fairy Tail. He's this weird, like, evil character in Fairy Tail. Like, I know it's supposed to be like, oh, no, he's just, like, the Batman of it. Like, he's the one willing to go just a couple steps further if need be. But he's not. He's just the evil douchebag of Fairy Tail.
The face that he pulled in that sequence was a look of triumphant evil.
He's like, got him! I think it's kind of unanimous on this one. It messed super betraying August for no reason is the big.
I should bring up an honorable mention that we got, which was Tsukishima showing up to fix Tensa's Zangetsu.
Again, there were so many Bleach ones that I was like, I don't even know where to start in that finale. Like, do you mention Aizen showing up and accomplishing next to nothing?
I think that at least warrants a mention because that is a pretty crazy moment.
Yeah.
Absolutely bring it up in the chat.
So now the biggest of the awards. We'll do best hero.
Best actor.
Yeah.
Best actor, basically.
Yeah. Best hero of 2016, Nick. Our nominees are All Might from My Hero Academia, Sanji from One Piece, Emma from The Promised Neverland, Asta from Black Clover, and Deku from My Hero Academia. I guess with honorable mention to Osamu from World Trigger, though this wasn't a year where he particularly was heroic so much as coming into
not him own. Specifically, no. Yeah. I mean, if this had been the year where he left his, where he abandoned his Trion body in order to save the day, then maybe, but, some very different, recommendations here. I mean, you've got, you know, the standard, like, you know, we've got our protagonists from three series on there, but Emma, of course, is a very different character. Mostly just in terms of, like, I think she definitely deserves to get nominated in terms of, like, she is a very strongly good character in a series full of liars and assholes. And she really stands out.
A series with a lot of morally...
strong morals.
Yeah, a morally gray series with one character who's, like, no, against nothing else, everyone's coming out. I won't have it any other way.
And causing complications, too, because of that, which is nice to see. Asta started to come into his own this year. I'm not going to pick him. I'm not going to pick him, guys, because I hate him.
I do want to give a legitimate case, though, for Asta. I didn't just put him in to fill out the ranks and everything. This was, I think, a better year for Asta. I think this is where a lot of his antics at least made him more admirable. They're like... the moments at the end of the Water Temple arc where he kind of encourages the Kaito, whatever his name is, and
Kyato
and the other girl to kind of keep up with their dreams. He kind of motivates his peers. The joke's always that Asta always kind of, you know, is the inspiration for every character. But
I'm sorry, Grateful in the chat. Why isn't Miss nominated? He stabbed August.
He apparently was the one thing.
He's the hero.
He's like, guys, I did it. It's like August is growing like huge behind him. He's like, I stabbed him. He's dead, definitely. But no, I think Asta is worthy of the nomination. I wouldn't give him it, but he's definitely worthy of it. For me, I think it comes down between All Might and Emma. Sanji is very good as well, but I think his real chance to take it is probably coming next year when we're going to get to see him act. Deku, again, very good.
Sanji, it's a little bit curious. I mean, he went through probably the most out of the characters on this, of everyone in One Piece. He went through the most and is probably the most appropriate pick for that series. But at the same time, more than being the hero, he was basically the damsel this year.
Yeah. And this came after a while of being gone,
also
too.
Considering that Deku this was really a growth year for Deku. He definitely did grow a lot, but it seems like his moment is still coming.
Which is actually kind of weird considering, because we put that big speech he had in there, which is a very big moment. But he also had that scene where he protected the kid from the muscle-based villain.
Gota.
And that was a really big heroic moment for him. He's had very big moments, but it's almost impossible to consider him considering what All Might did this year. Because of what All Might did and sacrificing what's left of his powers, essentially to make sure that Deku could become that huge hero going forward. He protected that flame and gave it all to defeat All for One. And then at the end of the year, came back in and kind of gave the real heroic message he needed to both Bakugo and Deku.
I have to give it to All Might. I mean, it's a little bit unfair.
Because
he can only do that once.
I will say Emma is really strong on this. I think she's fantastic, but, I think in terms of all around, yeah, what All Might did this year is pretty significant. Mm-hmm. So on to what may be my favorite award. The best villain of 2016. And this is a real cavalcade of villains here. We got Leashed from Black Clover, Asken Nachlavar from Bleach, Neo / Acacia from Toriko, All for One from My Hero Academia, and Uwawak from Bleach.
Let's talk about the Bleach ones first of all.
Okay. I want to just note real quick, because I know people are already in the chat going to be saying this. Big Mom's not on here because she hasn't done a lot this year. She's around, but
she will have her chance to shine, I think.
I imagine next year is when she'll actually be there.
Other than, like, getting Sanji to marry, like, oh no, she's planning on killing those asshole Vince Smokes.
Yeah, Judge was maybe a more likely one. Maybe Judge could have been on here, but.
With a dick. Yeah. Asken Nachlavar and Uwawak definitely brought a lot of entertainment to us. Asken Nachlavar more genuinely, because, I mean, he was easily the best character in Bleach, this year.
Oh yeah.
Very entertaining, very interesting character who brought, some needed levity to the series. He was comedic, but he was also threatening. He had interesting powers. I really did dig him. Uwawak, a lot of it was mostly with us making fun of him, but he did definitely have his moments to shine. But I think that he was really hurt by just how lazily bullshit his power was at the end.
And how kind of his defeat had to come out of nowhere almost.
Mm-hmm. Was really hurt by the rushed ending. Leashed, I think, would be a primary contender for this award if the first four chapters of his appearance had maintained that momentum through the rest of the year. Mm. Instead, he got his ass kicked a whole lot and hasn't shown up really since then.
If he hadn't gotten his shit pushed in like six times in a row and then not shown up till the end, he'd probably definitely be the front runner, I think.
So that brings us down to Neo and All for One. All for One was intimidating, and I like the way that he was leaving things off to Shigaraki. But I think that Acacia was the villain this year because of how gleefully evil the dude was. The faces that he pulled while mocking Jiro and Midora. I mean, the thing that really got us back into Toriko this year was that fight he had with Jiro, where he just openly mocked the idea that he cared about his family. Then we did the same thing to Midora, talking about how, oh yeah, well, Froze was an attractive woman. I liked getting to bang her, and she was good in the kitchen. Just such a douchebag.
He was a magnificent heel. Like, just so ever under everyone's skin. Getting stronger and stronger, like even a character who was built upon just a mountain of horseshit, like Midora, like who had I can reverse what everyone does, and I have meteor spice and all these broken powers, and even still, Neo not only beat him but is taunting him the whole time, talking about like, and I never loved you, and I didn't love your mom, and she was just a piece of ass to me, and he was so evil, but he also in that same way had the speeches too. Like, he has that whole long speech about the nature of the universe and hunger and how it's all
hunger
just
is everything.
And
yeah.
It's all that matters.
Appetite is eternal, yeah.
I agree with you 100%. It's Acacia to me. All for One's great, but All for One's like machinations are what are in work right now. He had a very impressive introduction, then he got beat, and now he's kind of sitting in a prison cell watching his chess pieces go about the board. But
he's the kingpin sitting and staring at that wall.
And he's just waiting for Daredevil to show up to talk to him, and he's just going to smash his face against the table and break his handcuffs.
I'm going to find the man who runs the prison, and I'm going to take that power from him. And then I will keep him company in his last days.
But yeah.
Best episode of that season.
I'm going to give it to Neo and Acacia. I think they just had a magnificent year. You know, they dominated that year, too, of Toriko. He was basically the entire year. But even though he became a good guy in the end, that was a character who got more intimidating and more interesting as time went on and really did kind of feel like a satisfactory final villain in the world of Toriko. Mm-hmm. So that is our superlative awards, our first time superlative awards.
Mm-hmm.
If you guys have any recommendations for new categories you want us to add next year, let us know and we can add those on there. But there's still one more award left out to give.
Yeah, we've got our overall favorites. And I think that we individually tallied for this. I think that you said that you did it too.
I didn't tally those. Okay. I just have these ones up here and then I put up a vote for our listeners to put their recommendations in.
Okay. Well, over the course of the year, actually, we did it a little bit at the end of last year, too. We've been naming our weekly favorites, as well as an MVP character. I have not tracked each individual character that we chose, because, I mean, that would kind of be... There were definitely a few where it was like, oh, yeah, you know, like, the protagonist got picked a couple of times. I think that, like, for example, Soma got picked a couple of times. All Might got picked a couple of times. I think Acacia got picked a couple of times. In general, it was, like, one character, one time the whole year, though. But I did compile, like, how many times did a character from a series get picked.
Okay.
And so I have all the stats here.
Okay, I'm really interested in this.
So let's start with the audience. Most times that the audience picked their favorite was One Piece. There were two ties over the course of the year, and so One Piece was picked 20 and a half times. My Hero Academia was the runner-up with 13 and a half, followed by World Trigger, then The Promised Neverland, then Black Clover and Food Wars, and then Toriko.
Wow, Black Clover had more picks than Food Wars.
Well, Black Clover was picked once.
Okay, so they were all kind of tied.
Food Wars was also picked once.
Gotcha.
Toriko was tied once. Then for the favorites overall, the MVPs, My Hero Academia got the most from me and tied for the most for you alongside World Trigger. And my second was One Piece.
Oh, World Trigger. Okay. That makes sense.
In terms of weekly favorites for a series overall, My Hero Academia was number one for both of us.
Huh.
Your number two was World Trigger. My number two was One Piece.
There you go.
Going down the line, let's see, for you, it was My Hero Academia, World Trigger, tie between Black Clover and One Piece. Food Wars, tie between Toriko and Promised Neverland, and then three-way tie between Nisekoi, Bleach, and Amalgam of Distortion. Zero for Fairy Tale.
I was gonna say, I didn't hear Fairy Tale on this list.
For me, it was My Hero Academia, One Piece, then World Trigger, then Food Wars, tie between Promised Neverland and Nisekoi, tie between Toriko and Black Clover, tie between Amalgam of Distortion and Fairy Tale, and then zero for Bleach. Fairy Tale got zero MVP picks and zero favorites from you, and zero MVP, and Bleach got zero MVP picks and zero favorites from me. Not too surprising.
Yeah, sort of making sense with the way things were aligning.
And it was like once and once for the other one. So yeah, overall it seems as though My Hero Academia was the favorite with One Piece a very close second, I would say.
Although, that's kind of like basing it off that year.
Just in terms of, yes, chapter to chapter counts.
Because I've been really debating on what I think the best series overall in 2016 was.
And keep in mind, of course, that doesn't take into account the fact that a lot of series were not present every single week. Of course, we had three series end. We had Promised Neverland only begin a couple of months ago. We had Jumpstarts showed up occasionally as our favorites. And, of course, World Trigger unfortunately went on hiatus. So it was cut short as well.
Yeah. I think I've settled on what I'm picking, though, for my favorite manga of 2016. This one took a while to decide upon. Actually, let's see what the audience picked for the poll that was put up this week.
They picked My Hero Academia.
Yes, they did. Actually, by quite a big margin, too. One Piece behind that, and then The Promised Neverland, with World Trigger just a bit behind that. I think there were a lot of really good series this week, or this year. My Hero Academia was fantastic. Promised Neverland was strong. World Trigger, despite not having a whole lot to do, got a lot of, like, if you're a World Trigger fan, I think you got a lot out of it this year. Food Wars, even though I don't think it was his best year, still really good. And One Piece was fantastic the same. And Toriko had some strong moments in there, too. I never remember moments where we really liked Black Clover. But overall, I think the series I came away at the end of the year enjoying the most, or at least I feel the most excited from having read, is The Promised Neverland. Really, for a series that kind of came out of nowhere from an a mangaka I did not know, a team, I guess, rather, with a premise that initially didn't have anything that really hooked me, has just become a series that almost by clockwork every week has me really excited for another chapter. You know, I'm constantly guessing at that series. You know, it already kind of twisted me on my toes by being like, Ray's the traitor, and being like, no, I just started liking him. But it's really such a fantastic series. Every week's kind of like a joy to read. It's a surprise. It hasn't like sunk down at all in any way. You know, it hasn't been running that long, but usually it takes series time to build up. Whereas with this series, it's kind of been great all the way through. So I give it to The Promised Neverland this year.
I totally understand that. I looked at it in terms of the whole year, so unfortunately Promised Neverland was at a disadvantage. I think that if it had been running for the entire year and it had maintained the quality that it has been in its first few months, then it would probably be my pick too.
Yeah.
But in terms of looking at the whole year, what I've gotten out of it the whole year, I have to go with My Hero Academia. A lot has happened in it. We had the big moments where there was the passing of the two torches between heroes and villains, students. There was closure that finally happened. Well, not closure, but a huge development finally happened in the relationship between Bakugo and Deku to cap off the year. There were occasional slow spots, especially in terms of the
hero
second
exam.
Half of the hero exam. But overall, in terms of the stuff that got out of it, the side characters that got expounded upon, the stuff with Kaminari and Shoji and the stuff that happened during the rescue with Bakugo, where Kirishima and Yairozu got involved, Ida stepping into more of a role as leader. Even the stuff that happened during the move into the dorms where they had more, character building with the students that hadn't really gotten to know so far. So much happened this year that I really, really liked, and I have to go with it.
No, absolutely. It was a fantastic year, I think, for My Hero, definitely.
My Hero wins the audience poll for the second year in a row, so.
It's really taken off. I think not enough can be said that just Jump in particular has been really fantastic this year. There's really no series I like dread reviewing, especially now that Bleach has kind of ended and Toriko kind of picked itself back up and is out of the magazine as well. Other series we were like, you know, I'm not a crazy big fan of Black Clover, but there's still usually a chapter every so often that I enjoy. The only series I like am never crazy about reading is Fairy Tail, you know, and that's for its own reasons. But I think Jump in particular, like what we get with the English Jump, has just been almost all really great series. I know not everybody agrees with that, but for my money, it's all been fantastic. And I really want to give like a special thanks to the English Jump team because they've been killing it this year. You know, we've been getting like great translations, great quality work. I know how crazy it must be when those weeks come in where it's like fucking 3 jump starts and 2 monthly. God damn it. Why did we do this? But beyond even that, there's all the stuff that happens that they released that we don't even talk about. All the, like the free stuff that comes out into the site, Asted Space, I think Dragon Ball Super, Eld Live, I think just recently started back up on there as well. And, one of our Patreon goals that maybe we'll hit this upcoming year has us, adding more series to the recap. So maybe some of those will get on there, but regardless of whether we ever do or don't talk about them, like I want to just mention how much work has to go into, you know, getting all those series, translating them and being so consistent with everything. So, it's been a great year, I think, for manga and, digital manga is continuing to grow. I hope. My only hope for 2017 is we might see it expand to more countries because I know we have a lot of listeners from places like Germany and some of those Eastern European countries that really don't have a chance to read it in English. And I'm hoping that maybe we'll see it expand to those places.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what the year will bring us. There's a lot of stuff that happened at the end of the last year in terms of the series that we cover that I really look forward to seeing what the next chapter holds. Hopefully we're going to have lots of fun moments this year as well. We are already in the midst of working on our next recommendation, which we should, I think, have ready to go next week, Barume Yokoso.
Yep. All right. Where I'm looking forward to 2017, Nick. I think 2016, in many ways, was a rough year, both in and outside the podcast. Just in terms of like health-related things that kept cropping up, or delays and things that pop up. But I'm excited for what's going to happen in 2017. I know it's something that we maybe say a lot, and maybe it doesn't have the same impact. But I legitimately mean this when I say we have very big plans for 2017.
I think that we were both working through things that we're starting to get out the other end on now, and it's going to let us enjoy the fun times more, basically.
Yeah, and I'm really excited. I think 2017 is going to be a very big year, not just for manga in general, but I think for this podcast specifically, I'm really excited for a lot of things we're going to have coming out and the potential for this podcast to continue growing. So. Thank you all for listening, Thank you all for coming in and listening in on us through 2016 and for sticking around into 2017. I'm always very grateful that people have enjoyed this podcast as much as they do. And whatever you guys send emails in saying to that effect about how much you enjoy listening or how much the show helps you or even just gives you a laugh, even if I can't say it out there, know that I do read it and it does is very appreciated and I'm very grateful.
It means a lot to us that it means a lot to you. So that is going to do it for us. 2016 is in the bag. Join us for the rest of 2017 as we talk on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Sometimes we need to have a little bit of a delay in order to get things straightened out, especially if we have streaming difficulties or stuff like that. But you can check us out on hitbox.tv/RoloT and twitch.tv/RoloT. And stay subscribed to our Twitter accounts for updates. You can follow at WMR Podcast and the hosts at RoloT and at Wide World of Time. Also, check out our past episodes to see if you haven't been listening to every single recommendation that we've done and something at the start of the episode where we were talking about weird series appealed to you. You can check that stuff out on our Podbean, weeklymangarecap.podbean.com, our YouTube, youtube.com/weeklymangarecap, and also you can subscribe to us on iTunes. And make sure to leave a comment or rating on there so that you can help us beat the woodworking podcasts.
Guys, New Year's resolution popping in here. A New Year's resolution I have absolutely no control over. But guys, 2017 Weekly Manga Recap becomes a top 50 iTunes hobby podcast. That's not high aspirations, guys.
That's not especially high.
I'm not hoping for the world here. I'm not like, we defeat all of the NPR podcasts. But I'm saying top 50, all right? That of the massive library of hobby podcasts on iTunes, we could, at least for a second in time, be considered one of the 50 best. That's my aspirations. You guys need to make it happen.
Oh, God. You can send us feedback as well as ask us questions to answer on one of our Q&A episodes and suggest future manga for us to read by sending all that stuff to weeklymangareadcap@yahoo.com. We've got a whole year ahead of us, which means a whole year of recommendations to get through. So if there's an idea for a manga that you think that we might have a good discussion about, now is the time to send that in.
Absolutely.
Special thanks go out to, of course, our Patreon supporters, because your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy.
A special thank you to Matt Wilson and Brandon Brown, who are our newest patrons. Thank you very much, guys. Rufus, your help and support is greatly appreciated.
And special thanks to the guys who help us create the podcast and help spruce it up into the current form that you see with your eyes now, sightly. With light reflecting off the screen, the visuals, the infamous planet, and of course Steve Mann, our title cardist. You can check out Steve Mann's various title cards that he has made over the course of helping us out with the podcast on his Patreon, patreon.com/Steve Mann, where they are free to view. And hey, if you want to see some of the more adult stuff, you can ask.
Yeah, I was saying, hey, it's right there. Yeah, you're consenting adults.
The guy does have a lot of fun drawing boobs whenever there's a busty chick in the series we write, is what I'm saying. That's going to do it. We will have, hopefully, Welcome to the Ballroom next week. That's going to do it for us here on Manga Recap.
Yes. Any New Year's resolutions on your part, Nick?
Nope.
Fantastic. You're like, more quality end of shows. I'm going to really take my improv up a step this year, I feel.
So, week two. Hey, Nick, you have anything that you want to say at the end of the episode this time? Nah.
Week three. Nick, anything this week? And work.
What?
I'm like, all right.
What? I thought we were done already. Haven't we stopped recording?
I like look over here on your cell phone like, huh? Why? Are we still doing this? I'm like, God damn it, Nick.
Nick, why'd you take your shirt off? Oh, the camera's still on.
Happy 17, everybody. We'll catch you next time.